Well, it's a dynamic duo, we'll be back again. Other backers, DJ, you better pack it in. You're lacking sense, trying to tangle with us. Go with the big black bullies in the back of the bus, just smacking you up and stealing your lunch money. You're such a buddy, if you look just a touch. Only by the end of the day, that's understandable. What can I say? You got strong man to be.
Gary has absolutely no idea what has happened to it. Still doesn't know.
This isn't a Rugger podcast, last time I checked.
We wouldn't be allowed to talk about Rugger. We didn't go to the right schools.
That's right. I tell you what, Stan are really doubling down there. It is everywhere, the rugby union on Stan.
It's worth a crack.
Billboards and ads and, yeah. They obviously think there's a market for it in Australia. So I guess a lot of people go to private schools here.
Well, the sort of people who watch rugby are the sort of people who can afford add-on subscriptions and things like that and have good enough internet to be able to pay for it and love it in such a strong niche way that it's profitable to provide like that. Whereas union on free-to-air television doesn't really work because there isn't the broad enough audience to make that worthwhile.
Yeah.
I saw someone was running the bulldozer through that main stand at Ballymore too, which is a little bit of...
Oh, really?
Yeah, you know, they got that kind of that big square one? Well, that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're built, they're knocking that down, I think.
I was never allowed in there, mate. That's.
Oh, yeah, I was always again friggin' the hill. But it was always, it always looked like it should be there.
I always remember going, sitting on the hill when I was a Reds member when the, you know, one of the New Zealand franchises would come and you felt very lonely.
Oh, well, I was usually there to help cheer on the New Zealand. So I remember seeing the Reds play the Highlanders there not shortly after I started dating my wife, my then girlfriend, now wife. And we went with a mixed Kiwi and Australian contingent there, and there were this tribe of Kiwis who just had just a barrage. It was like the Barmy Army, but in terms of British, you know, Kiwi rugby fans, and just singing filthy songs about basically the state of everything. It was a completely non-rugby union kind of audience for the Australian context. There wasn't nearly enough Pims and cucumber sandwiches.
Yep. Yes. Well. Only two NBA games today. It seems
three.
A bit,
there were three. There were the two TNT games.
Oh yes, Sacramento
and
played.
Yes, and the Heat played the Kings and beat them, which is nice to see the Heat beating literally anybody because they've been on the street that is the struggle for quite a while.
Yeah, well, when you can't beat Steph Curry and a collection of guys off the street, then what can you? You know. You really are.
Well, they had that game in the bag. So this was yesterday. They had the Warriors covered, and then they just didn't have the Warriors covered.
Yeah, I suppose they're only a loss out of the play-in game, but it's definitely a far cry from the Eastern Conference Finals. That's
certainly
sure.
A far something.
It's the 76ers lost four in a row and are still fairly easily leading the Eastern Conference.
And the Bucks have now lost five in a row and are easily...
And still
yes.
Third.
The Nets have kind of caught up to them basically just by winning while everyone else sucks. So they're... So Brooklyn are up to what, 19 and 12 and Philadelphia are 19 and 10. And Milwaukee are 16 and 3.
What did I see? The Blazers would be like second in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, they're
yeah, they'd be second in the Eastern Conference right now.
At 8 and 10, yeah.
Dame is
speaking of one dude and a whole bunch of randoms.
Hey, put some respect on Carmelo Anthony, Hall of Famer Carmelo Anthony, future Hall of Famer.
Oh, yeah, someone shouted at him today. Was it yesterday? To that he needed to retire, and he's like, "Shut your ass up!"
Yeah,
I didn't even know Daryl Morey was in the building. I don't even know what he was doing there.
He's like a dude that went through a midlife crisis and then came out of it the other side with some hard truths realized and actually thrived from the experience of, you know, being a petulant, whiny man baby in his midlife crisis, because that's essentially what he did. And now he's, you know, he's playing a different game and fitting in nicely.
Also, the coaching staff were better where he went.
Yeah, better for him. And I think the leadership's obviously a lot better.
We're talking about a James Harden-led team coached by Mike D'Antoni, who, you know, for all the good things he does, he's not a leader in terms of coaching. He just draws up the plays. He doesn't tell people what to do. So you're not getting leadership from Mike as a coach. You're getting intelligence. You're getting smart shit, but you're not getting you're not getting strong personality stuff.
Well, if you've read Jack McCallum's book, it's pretty obvious that all the Suns' leadership came from Nash. Like that was where it was.
That's interesting that that's what the Nets have chosen to recapitulate with Nash and D'Antoni over in Brooklyn.
Yeah, well. They're not going too bad considering the absences that they've had, and they're still in second. You know, they're not fully sort of weaponized.
Yeah, yet. Although they've run into other teams who have been like they've run into the Lakers, who were without Anthony Davis and Dennis Schroeder, and I think KCP went down in that game as well. So they were able to put the hurt on the Lakers, but
a little bit of the Jazz argument, isn't it? That they've you know, they had an easy schedule and then they've had this hard stretch, but they played the Clippers without Kawhi. But you still got to win those games. Like, the Suns played the Nets the other day and should have beaten them, had everything tied down and then let it slip through their fingers.
James Harden just did James Harden things, yeah. Well, the thing about Utah is that at a certain point, you can no longer just say, oh, they've had an easy schedule or yada, yada, yada. They've won 20 out of their last 21 games.
Yeah, which is just really, really hard to do in the NBA.
Yes, particularly when you play in the fucking in the Northwest Conference, because Portland is in their conference and Denver is in their conference.
Yeah, so Denver was one of the sides I wanted to talk about. Do they have to swallow their pride and trade Michael Porter Jr. and get someone that can help Jokic now?
Who's buying? And not waste? Who's taking on Michael Porter Jr. Given that they were the only team that thought they could do anything with Michael Porter Jr. That's why he fell so far in the draft.
Oh, no, I think there's heaps of interest out there for him now.
Not after this season. He's been fucking terrible this season.
And that's why...
At the end of last season, yeah. But now, they're not going to get value for him in the same kind of way.
That he was being discussed with the Rockets, and they sort of said, you know, you can have everyone else but him and Murray. And that sort of seems a little bit nuts now. It just feels like Jokic just needs someone else that's reliable because Murray's so hot and cold.
Yeah, Murray just hasn't been that bubble force. But, you know.
And Jokic
has been said by other people.
Awesome.
The bubble was a special case for shooters. You know, you had perfect sight lines and no interruptions and, it's very easy to get hot in the bubble. I mean, Duncan Robinson did that as well. Tyler Herro did that as well.
Yeah, so, and it feels like the Nuggets are going to have to do something because as good as they are with development, it just feels like they're letting stuff slip away. A little bit like the Mavericks. Like the Mavericks at least made the big play for another star to go with Doncic, and it's sort of not working out that well. But at least they're thinking along those lines, like every season is a season we've got to have a go at surrounding this guy with the best possible talent that we can. I don't know. Because the Nuggets just aren't going to get someone in free agency.
I think the problems in Dallas extend beyond the front two, though. Because once you get past those first two, where's the rest of the roster? There isn't really much there outside of Porzingis and Luka.
Richardson has been a massive downgrade from Seth Curry.
Worst season of his career in terms of shooting and in terms of everything, really.
So I guess those guys too are sort of counting on their rookies and their second year players to make a bit of a jump, you know, to get those guys up to decent role players very quick, which is sort of smart the way they've drafted. Like, you know, Green, the Aussie guy, he sort of has that feeling of being like a really solid role guy, you know, that's sort of how he would project to being good in the league.
Yeah, he plays like an AFL player. You know, he's full of energy and he's full of running, and you know, he's a bit like a less ankle biting Deli.
Mm. It's going to be an interesting because they named a really good Australian squad if there ever is an Olympics. That they named a really good Australian squad for that tournament, and they got a good coach, and it's a very even the guys like Thibel, who's, you know, how many weeks has he spent in Australia? Probably not that many. But he has that same sort of character. Like, he's got the characteristic that already fits into that Australian style of play. You know, that scrappy, you know, make a deflection, run down to the three-point line really hard so you're open and bomb away. Like, he sort of fits the mold of an Australian Olympic player anyway.
Yeah, I'd totally forgotten that he had a vague familiarity with Australia.
He's declared.
Yeah,
he's,
I was going to say, was he just standing too close to Brett Brown and Ben Simmons and
a few others? Accidentally got citizenship.
Yeah, or did he bite down on a magic 4-20 pie from the concession stand at the Sixers
at that game?
They knighted him.
I don't know, but I'm very happy to have him. Like, the starting five will be fucking all attitude and length and
sledging
sledging. Yeah, that's right.
Well, it's a shame that Kyrie didn't commit, because he did some excellent sledging today, because LeBron took a technical free throw and missed it, and Kyrie sort of shouted to the Lakers bench, "Is that the best free throw shooter you guys have?" So we know who LeBron isn't going to be picking first on All-Star draft night.
Yeah, this, like, I quite like the captain's pick thing.
I didn't think they were going to do it this year, because I thought they'd just be trying to, but I suppose that anything to create interest.
Yeah, I actually sort of like the West team. I'd really like to see the West team play with, like, Luka, LeBron, Jokic just slinging passes to, you know, Curry and Lillard, each standing on, you know, one spot just outside the logo. It's sort of like
I don't think they'd be running a three-guard lineup, because if they were, then Lillard would be able to start in the All-Star game.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, crunch time. Crunch time lineup.
Luke is not on the floor at a crunch time lineup. Not based on his form this year.
Probably not. And I think he's there for laughs more than anything else, isn't he?
Well, he's not there to go to the club, because the NBA's been very clear. No parties for anybody, notwithstanding the fact that all Atlanta nightclubs are already, you know, advertising the parties they're going to hold during All-Star. So,
How many soft tissue injuries are going to develop in the next 2.5 weeks, do you reckon? Kawhi, for sure. What,
from being in the club or from...
So they don't have to go to Atlanta and expose themselves to COVID, I'm saying.
Well, it's one night, so it's not... I actually think they're going to be fine, because it's going to be... They've taken all the fun out of it. It's literally just fly in, play the game, fly out again.
Yeah.
They're not having any parties, not going out. They're not being exposed. There's no fans.
It's essentially just for TV, isn't it? It's just so TNT can get some content. So
it's going to be grim as fucking hell. It's going to be the grimmest All-Star imaginable. It's going to be more grimmer than the fucking NFL Pro Bowl.
Well, wasn't it? There was one in a really cold...
Anthony Davis has already got in with his injury, hasn't he? So he's got
him.
Yeah. He scheduled that really well. I was thinking the other day that, you know, Anthony Davis has got this reputation as being a little bit soft and a little bit injury prone. And I wondered if he was known as Tony Davis, would he have the same reputation? I feel like a Tony Davis is a player who's a bit more hard-nosed and a bit more tough and a bit more dependable. Whereas Anthony Davis kind of feels a little bit more, you know, airs and graces. And
Tony Davis sounds like he's going to knock on your door with a 4x2 and demand a bit of money.
Tony Davis is known to local police. Tony Davis has been caught, you know, selling stolen VCRs at the back of his valet.
Don't make me call my mate Tony Davis.
Yeah, I'll bring Tony over.
The West is still nuts. I guess there's a 6-game gap between 4th and 12th now, which is a little bit wider, but it just still feels like you could go for a 4 or 5 game run, or COVID could hit aside a little bit. Like, so the Spurs, this is where, you know, the Spurs are lucky. They've got their COVID thing happening and they're just shut down, and at least they're not having to play with 7 healthy players like the Heat and the Wizards did earlier in the year. And
yeah. And the Heat don't look like they've recovered. You know, it's almost like they've all got long COVID. Yeah, Jimmy Butler certainly had a fairly long COVID, not quote unquote long COVID, but he certainly was struggling for a lot longer.
Well, Tatum was saying that he still doesn't feel like he's, you know, anywhere near back to full strength. So
doesn't have his lungs.
This is the thing that worries me, is that there'll be, you know, someone that'll have a significantly shortened career by by getting it, I guess.
Yeah. But, I mean, they didn't necessarily get it because they were playing basketball. I mean, the state of America.
Yeah, it's more getting it because they live in the United States.
They're more likely to get it just for existing. Yeah, once you get past San Antonio at six, it kind of becomes teams that you are a little bit less convinced by in terms of their record. Golden State at 16-13, Denver at 15-13, Memphis at flat 500, Dallas at 13-15 are the current play-in tournament people, and then you got New Orleans and Sacramento at 12-16. And if you're at 12-16, you shouldn't be in consideration for playoffs anyway. But yeah, Utah and the two LA teams are still the absolute peaks.
It feels like a year where the trade period could really impact that 7-12 race.
Certainly the trade and the buyout market. I think there's going to be more likely to be in the buyout market because I don't think anybody's trading for Blake Griffin or Andre Drummond, both of whom have been sat by their teams in the hope that they can get them traded before the deadline. People aren't going to give up bulk picks to get hold of those particular large wash gentlemen.
No, but your George Hills and your Al Horfords, those sort of players might find their way onto a middling team and possibly make a bit of a difference.
You're thinking, going back to the start of this conversation, Denver, none of those pieces are particularly, maybe George Hill, but none of those pieces are particularly useful for Denver.
No.
Because, you know, Drummond, Horford, Grievan Griffin, how do you make them work with Jokic? I mean, if what Blake Griffin is good at the moment is passing. He can't dunk and he can't rebound. He can't even jump more than 6 inches off the ground. That's not going to make him any more useful than, you know, he's basically just a shittier Jokic.
Kevin Love might be interesting, but he's worth shitloads of money. Like, just trying.
But again, we're talking about fours and fives, aren't we?
Yeah, there's no.
You need wings. I think. Well, Denver. Denver need is wings. Well, we all need wings. Buffalo
and the Bulls are probably going well enough that they're not going to sell any of their wings. The Hawks absolutely want to make the finals, so they're not selling. Same with the Hornets. I'm just looking at the East. It's like, who's got anything to sell?
The only one is long mooted argument that Aaron Gordon needs to go somewhere where he'll be appreciated.
Yeah. Yep. But again, does he really?
But Orlando have been playing him as a four, haven't they? And he really needs to be playing further down the size chart, if you like.
No, I think it's the other way around. They normally play him at three, and I think he needs to play four where he does no playmaking and just scores. So he probably fit pretty well with Jokic because he doesn't have to do much thinking. You know, Jokic does all the thinking for you. You just have to hit open shots. Yeah.
Cleveland are definitely in they're sort of trading into a tank. I think they've dropped almost 10 games on the bounce since that, because they were, you know, roughly 500, and now they're 10-19, and they just completely dipped out of it. The Colin Sexton explosion has been doused in fire retardant foam, so that's kind of the end of that, I think.
Yeah, and then sides that you would think, like Hornets and the Bulls, were two sides where you thought, you know, maybe you'd be able to winkle out a Zach LaVine. Or who's the sharpshooter on the bench for the Hornets that hasn't had much of a run? But they're going well enough that they probably want to keep their depth. If anything, they want to sort of bolster it up so they can try and make a run for that sixth spot.
Well, right now they're right there, aren't they? I mean, they're Charlotte, basically after Toronto, who have picked their shit up and are almost a 500 team again. You got New York, who are hanging in there on, you know, grit and grind and being shouted at by Tibbs. Charlotte, Chicago, and Atlanta, with Miami and Orlando following in behind. But they're solid 500 adjacent teams, Chicago and Charlotte. Certainly the projections I was looking at like Charlotte's chances of making the postseason more than Chicago's, but that's just because they think a lot of Atlanta.
I do find it slightly amusing that the Celtics traded Rozier and got the worst of the bargain. It feels like a bit of the karma for the way they treated Thomas.
And also just for Danny Ainge just big noting himself about how fucking genius he is. It's a flat 500 team. It just they're right on form.
Yeah, that side does not inspire. Feel right, does it?
They just don't inspire. They just don't have, and it partly is because Kemba is basically load managing himself or being load managed because his knee is fucked. Partly it's because their Jalen's and or Jason's quotients have been reduced by one. Marcus Smart's been in and out of the lineup as well. So, I mean, they are a team of that works from a whole bunch of parts that work together, a bit like that Miami team. And without those parts, the whole fucking thing grinds to a halt. Now, going to a halt being fifth in the East with a 500 record is not the end of the world. They're definitely going to be here at the end of the season. But
They feel like a second-round max ceiling sort of team, though.
I mean, at the present, they'll be in a 4-5 with Indiana, which is probably a coin flip. And then they have to face whoever comes first in the East. And I suspect by the end of the season, it's probably more likely to be Brooklyn than Philly.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I think the Nets are still going to drop like games where you'll just look at it and go, "What the fuck happened there?"
But I mean, here's the thing: everyone's talking about, when the Nets get it all together, when the Nets get all their players on the court. What if they don't? What if this is the way it rolls for the rest of the season? Every few games, one of Harden or Durant or Kyrie, and it's usually Durant or Kyrie. To be fair, Harden's pretty hard to.
Yeah, but he's pretty durable.
Pretty durable, but that he ends up having to carry. It's almost like he's left Houston, the team where he had to carry the team forever, and he's got all the way to Brooklyn, and he still has to carry the team because he's the only one who was an injury prone. But who's to say that this doesn't continue to happen?
But it's the East, so you can. That's probably enough to get you the second seed in the East. This is the Zach Lowe argument for having three superstars, though, is that if one of them's out,
get by on two,
you've still got two absolute fucking guns. And in finals games, you're playing them both 42 minutes anyway. So
this is why you have four engines on a 747. If you lose one or two, you can still make it home. Mm. Milwaukee, though, I mean, they look like shit today. They really did.
They're trying different stuff, and it's not working.
No, it's
and
you not. Just,
you just sort of wonder whether Bud's going, well, let's try this. I don't really understand how it works because I've never done it before, but let's give it a go.
But they're really spiky because they lost their last five, but they won the five before that. So if they are just fucking about to figure out who they are and what they can do, I hope someone's explained that to Giannis. But I suppose the other point is that Giroux's been out for, I think, this entire stretch of five games that they've lost.
Yeah, he's been out for all five games.
And Chris Middleton's been anonymous. So it's been...
After being... Like, it seemed like they had a really nice balance between Drew, Giannis, and Middleton sort of each sort of fitting into a role. And now it just feels slightly unbalanced, but... They just have no. Their margin for error is so like they don't have the Nets thing. Like they need all those three guys firing because the depth chart below them is so bad.
Yeah, and even then, with everyone together, they can still suck. They can still be unpicked. I mean, obviously, they didn't have Drew when they got dramatically unpicked by Miami in the bubble. But you've still got the exhaust port of the Death Star that is Bud, and he is trying to figure out a different way of routing all of that, all the ducting to stop it from being quite so vulnerable to a thermal torpedo. But
and this is where the Jazz feel really good in that Conley's been out for four games and, Clarkson's had a couple of 20-plus games and Ingles has had a 27 and a 22.
Yeah, but anyone can rack points. I mean, even Ben Simmons got a 42-point game and he actually looked terrible for most of it, so... I might be alone on that island, but I wasn't mentally keeping score of Ben Simmons. I just every time I looked up, Ben Simmons was either passing out of attacking position or falling over, and he scored 42 points. And look, in theory, was tremendous. But
42 points and his defense is
but they lost that game.
Shabby.
So
yeah, but I don't think Simmons had anything to do with that loss. Like, Green literally didn't hit a shot until the end of the third quarter. And this is the same thing with Denver. Like, I looked at the box score
three quarters
through the game. The other Seth Curry had like 12 in that game. Like Green and Curry basically gave them fuck all. And it's that's the thing.
That's like vintage Seth Curry. And by vintage, I mean Sacramento vintage Seth Curry.
But if you've got a distributor like Simmons and you've got shooters like Green and Curry, then you're going to win or lose based on their 3-point percentage, aren't you? And if Green can't hit a shot and Simmons scores 42, well, not much you can do about it.
Basically, they need Milwaukee need Giroux and Giannis. Philadelphia need Joel and Ben. When they have Joel and Ben, they are probably one of the best teams in the entire league. But without them, if they've only got one or the other, it's a bit sketchy.
Well, that if you don't have one of them, then you need those two shooters to be hitting like 50%.
Yeah.
If they're hitting 50% and you've got one, you probably win the game. But the beauty of having Embiid is when Green misses his first four shots, you can just go, well, let's just post Joel for the next four shots.
Let's give it to the big man on the block and get him to get to work.
Because he's essentially he's either going to get 2 points or he's going to get fouled. I really hope they're healthy going into the finals. I'd love to see them do well.
Well, someone's not going to be, and it's going to dictate their season. Well, I think
at the moment it looks like it's going to be the Heat. It looks like the Heat are just never going to be unbroken.
Yeah, but if they get everyone on the court and they could run the table. I mean, they did this last year. They were nowhere, and they ran the table from fifth.
Well, if they're fully functional, like it's really only the 76ers and the Nets that you would feel that, and like everybody else from three to ten,
the Bucks with everybody firing.
If they were at full strength, but even then, the Heat would go, well, we did it last time.
Yeah.
And by the time they got to the Bucks, they would have already like won a play-in tournament and beaten, you know, someone else. So
I actually think Toronto are probably better than Indiana and Boston, and they're probably going to slide up to the four because they've quietly looked really good now that they've figured their shit out. Spicy P and Van Vliet and company. In fact, it was them who I saw beat one of the games where the Bucks got dealt with. Was Toronto yesterday.
And I think Lowry missed. Wasn't that the game he injured his ankle and he missed a fair chunk
I think
of that
he,
game,
yeah, so. He went out of it at one point and they they forged on regardless. There's a lot of teams in the East that are kind of built, like they're not super, they're the exact opposite of your Brooklyn Nets or even your Bron AD Lakers or whatever. They are really built from a whole lot of good to very good parts. And if you take out any of those good to very good parts, the wheels fall off.
And good coaching too. Yes. I feel like Snyder and Nurse are like, oh, Conley's out. Oh, that's okay. I've already thought of 19 different ways we can play without Conley.
The Jazz are the most perfect example of this because they are everything's together and they are performing at a superhero level. They are just ridiculously good. I mean, I think at the moment, if you converted it to like an 82 game season, they'd be on like a 69 win pace, which is good, I believe, is the word.
Yeah.
It's really quite good.
That's handy.
It's usable. It's usable. So you got Joe Ingles on Utah and you got Ben Simmons on Philadelphia. You've got that great Australian team you're talking about. Did you see the story from the NBA store, the Australian part, the NBA store.au?
Yes,
saying
I did see this.
There isn't a single Australian in the 10 most popular, most bought jerseys from the site, from Australian audiences. In the last year.
Yeah,
but there is one New Zealander.
That's because there's a million fucking Kiwis in Australia and they all like the NBA. That's why I tell you right
now. Only buy the one shirt. They're buying vintage Sean Marks Suns jerseys. And to be fair, that doesn't count, you know, the people who are buying their jerseys from Rebel or fucking, you know, wherever your local sports store
is. Which is where, like,
Mick Simmons Sport in Centre of Sydney.
If you go to the Nike store, like, It's Simmons and then LeBron and Giannis and that's about all you can
but
buy.
But the Nike store's range is shit. Like they have fuck all compared to the NBA store who have all of the jerseys.
But I would I really wanted to buy an Ingles Jazz City jersey and you just can't buy it. Like a lot of this is because the NBA store serves up a fairly bland palette of jerseys.
Yeah, but and you a lot can of the get guys, a custom. You can just get a blank jersey and stick Ingles 2 on it.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of the guys I know from Touch that bought...
Actually, you're the sort of person who put, you know, Beasley and the infinity number on your back because it would be all about you. Well, Beasley and C for coach. HC for head coach.
They actually did put C on the back of my Philippines training jersey. And
was that for coach or was that for something else?
Yeah. No, it was for coach.
You sure it was for coach?
Well, I got it.
Is that what they told you it was for? It wasn't that other word that we used for Eddie Maguire?
What is this on the back of my shirt? And they're like, coach. And I'm like, I don't want a C on the back of my shirt. I want a number. Any number. Give me 49. I don't care. Yes.
Well, you can make a C into a 6. And you make another C into a 9, and that would be nice. You can't. No, you don't get to be a number because you're the coach. You're not down with the rank and file. You're not one of the boys. You're in management now. The working class can kiss my ass. I've got the boss's job at last. So obviously that data. I thought that data was interesting, but I think as we said, it leaves out the casual fan who literally just going to fucking Culture Kings or somewhere.
All the Touch guys, they all a heap of them usually. Like band together and do a big purchase from the States and just get it shipped out. Still cheaper. So like there's heaps of different places you can buy from the States and then, you know, get 10 jerseys posted out to Australia. It's cheaper than buying from the NBA Australia stores.
Or you just buy them out of a Rebel Sport bargain bin 2 months after the end of the season. Shouts to my Dante Exum jazz jersey.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up back there on a minimum contract.
I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up back in the NBL, which is a bit unfortunate. Also a bit unfortunate was Dre's diatribe about how it was unfair that, you know, players aren't judged by the same by the same rules as teams in terms of, you know, players get sat and whereas if players want to, you know, dictate their own future, they get, I think, what was the phrase he used about James Harden? I think he was trying to say castigated, but I don't think Draymond knows the word castigated. Right. So saying James Harden got castrated, which is going to look at this way. It's going to affect his enjoyment of the clubs in Atlanta if that's actually true. Suddenly he's going to have a lot more free time because there's not going to be any fucking point of him going to Magic City.
Well, what did he say? He's like, let's be fair, Harden. Well, he didn't say Harden was tanking.
No, he said, if you're, you know, James is doggy it, and let's be fair, he's doggy it. That's right. Yeah. And he was. Yeah. I mean,
yeah. This is
just a long fucking. It's just a long audition tape for the Turner, the TNT panel.
I really hope he doesn't do that. I hope he goes and becomes a GM or becomes a coach because he's a really fascinating guy. And I reckon
I want that TNT panel to get rid of some of the old washed fucking Channel 9 commentary team sort of mentality that it's been rolling with for a while. It's about time some of those old washed pricks fucking waddled off.
Well, the thing with Draymond is because he's not a superstar player, he sort of vocalizes, I think, what a lot of the mid to lower range players are thinking.
He's like the drummer in a superstar rock band.
Yeah,
he's the most relatable member because he does a skill that we can relate to, and he's not incredibly famous, but he hangs out with people who are.
Yep, and he's pretty articulate, and he's not afraid to, you know, get something off his chest, which. The NBA media must just love him or love the theory of him, I guess.
They love him as a content factory. We love him as a content factory. Dame Lillard should be an all-star starter, isn't an all-star starter. But this will just serve, just like the time he was left out of the all-star game entirely, it'll serve to turn him into even more of a fucking world-destroying hurricane. And I pity every basketball team that has to play the Portlands for the rest of the year. Particularly, what was the team that John Hollinger used to work for? The Grizzlies, wasn't it? I think Dame might torch them just as relevance. Because, I mean, did you hear that podcast he did with Zach Lowe where he was trying to claim that Dame Lillard shouldn't be considered in the top 10 of MVP voting because of some nebulous argument about point differential and some other bullshit, which he totally ignored when making the case for Steph Curry, which is, you know, the case for Steph Curry MVP and the case for Dame Lillard MVP look pretty similar. You know, they're doing it on their own with a team full of leftovers and reprobates. And they're putting up ridiculous numbers, and it's a magic and gorgeous, and much applause to the pair of them.
The only difference really is Curry shoots more threes and can sort of like bulk put you out of a game early, and Dame, you really want to have like a 20-point lead.
Probably not enough.
If you're going into the last 5 minutes. If you're going into the last 5 minutes against him.
In the last, since I think it's about 13, 14, there's been 20 games where he's taken the winning shot in the last 20 seconds. Either a game tying or game, go ahead. So he is the most clutch. He is clutch person of all clutchness. Yeah. Big scoring is actually up though. I did see some ridiculous stat earlier in the week. There was a night. There was probably one of those, you know, 11 or 12 game nights. So there's a lot of games on, but 15 dudes scored 30 points or more that night, including like Sadiq Bey.
Oh, like, yeah, average scoring is definitely yeah, up,
and that's sure. And that goes back to a theory that Dan Lebatard, you know, loves, that these gyms are just a shooter's dream because the sight lines are so clear. There's no, you know, it's almost like having you know, cricket sight screens up. You've got perfect vision of everything. You're not getting distracted. There's not loud noises and crowds, you know, mooting you and fucking courtside Karens throwing drinks at you unless you're LeBron.
Well, that's one of the interesting things too is, like, when these crowds come back, you know, if they get enough people vaccinated that they can have semi-full stadiums for finals, the fans that are going to be in there are going to be so keen because they've been starved of any live sport for so long that, you know, the Lakers or the Jazz or whose else has got like a really good home crowd? Indiana's got a pretty good home crowd.
Denver, but I mean, part of that is the altitude.
It is the altitude.
Utah
this is the one I'm thinking of. Like, if they get the one seed and have home court all through the finals, that would be really interesting.
Their home crowd is not pleasant, strong, but because of reasons that aren't necessarily fun. Golden State need the crowd back, but not necessarily because they're a good crowd, because they're not the crowd that they used to have.
No, I think they used to have that sort of
give
you a lift crowd, and now it's
they used to be in Oakland.
Polite applause while they check their fucking, you know, crypto balance.
And isn't them playing with a jersey that says Oakland, we believe, on a empty court in San Francisco some of the grossest shit? I think we've said this before, but it's so on the nose, that Oakland, we believe jersey.
They had the Oakland, we believe, and the terrible Miami jerseys on the court at the same time. It was just like, my eyes.
That looked like
eyes.
That was a nightmare. That looked like somebody had vomited. That was pretty grim.
Yeah. I quickly just wanted to say
that you're losing the tipping competition. Yes, I know. It's bad.
Yes.
I've got a lot of games in. You've got a lot of games in hand, though. I mean, my teams have played 286. You 280. And Adam's 284. The scores are 152, 142, 131. So we're kind of spacing out.
Yeah. I was sort of looking at it like I need one of those. Like Denver has to make a run, I think. Denver's the side that I need to really get back up to that top three spot. And I just don't know whether they've got the cattle to do it this season. So.
Well, so in terms of big teams of yours that are underperforming where you'd expect them, certainly Denver. I think you probably expected more out of Golden State, or maybe not. Phoenix are doing about as much as you'd hope.
Phoenix are sort of the upside, and Denver are the downside.
But none of your teams are copiously underperforming. Like they're not fucking terrible. Maybe Atlanta. Maybe you expected more out of Atlanta, but. I mean,
in the East, I did.
Yeah.
I thought they'd be around six. Like, I thought they would be where.
But you've got two of the top three teams. You got two of the top three teams in the East, and they're winning a lot of games. I mean, Philly at 19 and 10, they're not fucking about. It's just that I happen to end up with the best teams in the West, and they are exceptionally good at racking up W's in the Lakers, the Clippers, and Utah. And that's kind of why, you know, when we were arguing very drunkenly about, you know, why those three teams were not going to be anywhere near as good as they were previously. Your arguments were mostly in terms of the context of what they would be like at the end of the season. And in the meantime, they were still going to rack up a lot of W's, even not trying particularly hard, because they just have, you know, shit. Everyone else is not going to be trying particularly hard. I'm still astounded by Portland, though. I don't understand how they're fucking 18-10. And I watch pretty much every game they play, and I still don't understand how they... I know that when they're 20 points down in the third quarter, I'm like, oh, we'll see how... how's Dame going to get him out of this one? It's literally like watching an old episode of the Dukes of Hazzard. Well, the Duke boys sure got themselves in a pickle now.
There's just no... The belief is... And I guess the belief in his teammates, too. It's like, if you're 15 or 20 points down, you're going to keep trying. You're going to keep setting picks. You're going to keep doing everything because... You would never feel out of it.
When they get Nurkic and McCollum back, have they got any chance against those top three teams? They've got to have it out. So they've got to have a puncher's chance.
I think they've got a chance against Utah and the Clippers, but I think they're the Lakers are just a bad matchup for them.
Yeah, the Lakers are a lousy matchup. They kind of need the Clippers to do something nefarious to the Lakers in a 2-3 and Portland to unhitch what Utah are good at, which is fucking everything, basically.
Yeah. All right, Doc, should we come back and talk some
tunes? We should just apologize to, because literally this time last week we jinxed Nick Kyrgios, who went on proceeded to lose that very night and made a whole lot of boomers very happy. So that's fucked. Did you see the daughter of the silversmith who designed the NFL's trophy was demanding, it was red and nude on the television, demanding an apology from Tom Brady for drunkenly throwing the trophy from his boat to another boat where these other players were. Notwithstanding the fact that Tom Brady throwing something means it's going to end up where it needs to go. He has kind of a track record on this. He's won more Super Bowls than any franchise. But this was the most unbelievable thing I've heard in a long time. The idea that she was so offended on behalf of the Silversmiths Union that he needed to apologize for putting a copy of a copy of the trophy that her dad had designed back in the friggin' 70s at some kind of mortal risk, if you can put a block of silver at risk. That was extremely cooked. And you think about the sort of things that trophy has seen in its life and the fluids that have been wiped off it. I think, you know, Tom Brady giving you a bit of sea air.
Throwing it in the water. Yeah. Throwing it in the water is probably a good thing.
Yes, it might disinfect it. You know, that's just a bit of seawater might actually clean it up a bit.
Hey, I know you're a little bit out on Test cricket, but there was a bit of pitch racism in the last England-India test.
Pitch racism.
I did
see a bit of that test, which was played on a I think they started on about a day four deck and they finished on about a day eight deck. I think it was
the same for both sides. A guy scored 160.
Not in the fourth deck.
No, but someone scored a century in the third innings.
It wasn't as bad. It was India and England completely reversed. It was like the Indian team remembered who they were, and the England team remembered who they used to be, and they just reverted to who they reverted to type.
Like if you watch Kohli bat, and this is the other thing was, like it was very like
Kohli was still terrible. That fucking the Ewing theory is strong with him.
He got 50 in the second innings, and this is the thing. Like it was a little bit like watching an.
They didn't need that 50. They won by 397 or some bullshit.
Yeah, but if
he's dead weight, he's a passenger. He's done. He's Blake Griffin.
Are you trying to get us clicks just by outrage?
Well, if I couldn't, I tried to cancel all of Test cricket. No one listened, so now I'm just going to cancel individual players. Steve Smith, he's also
all
right. I mean, he single-handedly lost that New South Wales Victoria. Shield game that finished this afternoon. I think it was basically won by somebody called Fraser McGurk, who we pointed out online sounds like a character from a Harry McCleary book. Fraser McGurk from Donaldson's Work or something, I don't know.
You can write the Sheffield Shield kids book and make a mint that way.
It was interesting. It was fun watching Sean Abbott go completely fucking ham, though, this afternoon, just playing. Like, literally, they were bowling right on the left edge of the pitch to try and stop him from doing things. And he was literally walking across and cow hit, swatting it over deep mid-wicket, even though the ball was pitching, like, 3 feet outside off stump.
Wow. Jesus. T20's really just changed the way cricket can be played everywhere. Like I was thinking of Pant, you know, winning a test, you know, not that long to go. Still pretty important that he doesn't get out and just bending down and flipping the ball over the wicketkeeper's head for four.
Fucking dill scooping in a test match. That's always good times.
Yeah, you know, but in a way Batsman's that didn't game, look man. Risky. Just didn't look risky at all. Well, unless you're Ashwin, and then it's just your game.
That was a good knock from Ashwin, though. Not an easy pitch at all, and that turn he got. I did feel like it turned enough momentum to win them the Test match. That's that England were never going to be in the game, and they were chasing 400 and heaps on a pitch.
We watched probably 2 hours, hour and a half, like, you know, overcooking and eating dinner every day of that Test. It was an awesome Test to watch. It was better than fucking probably 85% of Test matches in Australia in the last 10 years. I'd much rather watch a game on a pitch like that than some of the fucking roads we've had in Melbourne and Brisbane in the last decade.
Yeah, but you've also got, you know, the Adelaide pink ball test where it always curves like we've taped up one side of the ball with insulation tape. I did enjoy there was an interview with Christian Vieri, Bobo Vieri, the great Italian striker who actually grew up in Australia because his dad came down to play for Marconi, I think it was. So he grew up until he was like 14 in Australia. And he grew up wanting to be a cricketer. His hero was Alan Border. So he had to watch he watched a lot of Alan Border, you know, captaining losing Australian sides in one day at a national through the late 80s. And it's incredibly relatable for this fucking Serie A superstar. So in lockdown, Vieri had been watching 80s one day cricket highlights, pretty much like the rest of us. Was stuck at home watching fucking World Series Cup highlights from 1986.
Big Rod Moody follower on Twitter.
Yeah, I imagine he's very keen on Robelinda.
Yeah. All right, dude. Let's get a drink and talk some tunes.
Let's do that. Cheers, folks.
See ya.